This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 weeks from today in St. Paul, Minnesota, Senator John McCain will accept the Republican Party's nomination for president. By now, almost everybody knows the highlights of his biography. A decorated naval aviator, held prisoner in North Vietnam for 5.5 years. He represented Arizona in Congress and the Senate for over 25 years. A Republican known to challenge his party's leaders and reach across the aisle. One of the lawmakers caught up in the Keating Five scandal of the 1980s and an unsuccessful candidate in a bruising campaign for the Republican nomination 8 years ago. Should he win in November, he would be the oldest person to be elected president the first time. But what do we know about the character, the beliefs, and the events that shape John McCain? Later, our summer movie festival continues. Today, it's Femme Fatale. Murray Horowitz joins us. But first, who is John McCain? We'll talk with people who know him from different stages of his life. We want to hear your questions, too, not about his positions or his policies. You can find about those on the website. What you want to know about the personality, the character, the beliefs of the man who would be the next president of the United States. In case you missed it, we did a similar show about Barack Obama on Tuesday. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with Bob Timberg, the author of John McCain, An American Odyssey, which is an expanded version of his earlier book, The Nightingale Song. He joins us from the studios of member station WYPR in Baltimore, Maryland. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Hey, nice to be here, Neil.
And you write that John McCain's family has a record of military service going back to the Revolution. His grandfather and his father were both admirals. You wrote that he sometimes clumsily, often grudgingly, always did his best to live up to family standards. Grudgingly?
Yes, I think without question it was grudging, at least in those early years. John McCain did not, in his heart of hearts, have this incredible desire to be a naval officer or a naval pilot. If he wanted to do anything when he was a teenager, he wanted to go to a place like Princeton. But the Naval Academy was essentially part of the world he grew up in, the service to country, patriotism. I mean, that was he lived in an ether that was made up of those factors. And eventually, he essentially gave in to what was expected of him and went to the Naval Academy.
When you grow up a Navy brat, obviously his father served in many different places around the world, you're not really from anywhere except the Navy.
That's really true. And in fact, in one of the most stunning events of his career, this was when he was first running for Congress from Arizona in the early 80s, people said he was a carpetbagger because he had just moved to the state about a year and a half earlier. And it was an issue that was really causing him problems. And at one point in a debate, one of the other candidates threw the carpetbagger charge at him. And McCain just snapped and said something along the lines of, "Listen, pal, I'm the son of a naval officer. I've lived in a lot of places because when you're in the Navy, you get dragged all over the place. And now that I think of it, the place I've lived longest in my life was in a prison cell in Hanoi."
A devastating response.
Yeah. A devastating response, and the carpetbagger issue was gone forever.
We'll get back to those experiences a bit later in the show, but first let me introduce Frank Gamboa. He's on the line from Fairfax, Virginia. He first met John McCain in 1954 when they were first plebes, first-year students at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis. They were later roommates for 3 years. He's now working for McCain's election campaign, and nice to have you on the program today.
Good afternoon, Conan and Bob. It's a pleasure to be here.
And let me,
hi, Frank.
Let me just ask you about what your first impressions of John McCain were when you first met him.
Well, my first impression was that he was a total gentleman. He was very astute in judging people, and he had a way of looking at you straight in the eye and not confrontational, but very intriguing, very interesting, high energy. And very funny. I mean, he was witty and very collegial. Just a great guy to be around. And we became friends, and we decided to become roommates at the end of plebe year. At plebe year, you don't get to decide anything, but at the end of plebe year, if you survive, they'll let you make a decision. And one of the most important decisions is who you're going to live with of your own volition. So Jack Dittrich, Keith Bunting, and myself and John all decided to room together at the beginning of youngster year, and we remained roommates for 3 years.
There's a great picture of McCain as a boxer at the Naval Academy in his book. McCain just leaning forward, and he says his style was just to come in, wading in, aggressively throwing punches until either he or the other guy went down. Does that sound like the guy you knew?
Yes. He was aggressive, but not overly so, just always leaning forward, always wanting to lead a pointed discussion. He had a wide circle of friends because he was had a wide range of interests, and people just gravitated to him because of he had such an interest in people that he would draw them out and establish a common basis for friendship. But mostly, you know, we didn't have radios or televisions, so we looked to each other to entertain each other, and that's why you bond so deeply at the Naval Academy. You just got each other. We were in a boys' school of 3,600 people.
Not known as a great student.
Well, you know, that's kind of a misnomer. He had the ability to study a subject immediately. We would spend 2 hours on our math, and he would spend a half an hour on it, and he would pass. He just had such an active intellect that he would prefer to read novels and history books. And he would do enough to master the lesson, but he was a very quick study. I was always impressed with his ability to grasp the subject so quickly.
And is the
Neil, if I could just interrupt here, one of
go
the
ahead,
points,
Bob Denberg. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the interesting points is that, yeah, McCain did not have great academic standing because, as Frank said, he essentially blew off courses he didn't like. And he didn't like fluid dynamics. He didn't like thermodynamics. He didn't like calculus. He didn't like differential equations. He didn't like electric circuits, and he didn't like electronics. Well, that was about half the syllabus. The thing that was interesting, though, is that even though he didn't like them, he could go in and talk to one of his classmates the night before a test and say, "Tell me what I need to know," and he could pick up enough to pass that test. You know, not he didn't ace it. But he got through.
Yeah,
he passed it.
It's also interesting that both his grandfather and his father were not exactly great students, and both later became well-known admirals, of course. Frank Gamboa, we have something of an impression of him at the Naval Academy as a hellraiser. Is that reputation justified?
Oh, that's been a little bit exaggerated. There was no question at all that he was socially vibrant, and especially he lived in Washington, so he had a wide circle of friends. More important, friends of the opposite sex. So he would invite us to his home, the home of his father, Jack McCain, Captain Jack McCain, and his mother, the delightful Roberta. And they were gracious. They treated us to their hospitality for 3 years. One time, I came down early for breakfast Sunday morning, and Roberta said, "Well, how many of there are you, Frank?" I said, "I have no idea. Let me go count." I came back down. I said, "There are 13 of us upstairs." I don't know,
you know
where
one of the
left, so she sent me out for more eggs and bacon. But, no, he was very social, very entertaining, and could do a good imitation of Marlon Brando.
The other thing is, Neil, that, you know, Frank uses a wonderful phrase that I've never heard before about John McCain being socially vibrant. Well, you know, there's also been said of him that going on Liberty with John McCain was like being in a train wreck. So that's pretty vibrant, I guess.
Those all apply.
Right.
Frank Gamboa, what do you see in the man now that you first saw all those years ago, and what has changed?
Well, you know, because he was a Navy junior and because his father and grandfather were very distinguished naval officers, he had a lot of visitors, admirals that had fought the World War II with his father and his grandfather. And we'd come back from class, and there would be a note say, "Admiral so-and-so is in the rotunda to see you." He'd come down and meet him, and it would just be someone who knew his father or his grandfather and just wanted to say hello to John. He would come back, and we'd say, "Well, who is that?" And he'd give us a quick thumbnail sketch of of who the naval officer was and why he was known to the family and what relationship he had to his father or his grandfather. So we got a thumbnail sketch of naval history. But out of all of that, it was obvious that John was very proud of his family heritage. He was very proud of the service ethic, and he was very proud of the Navy. He was just a little bit conflicted on whether he wanted to have the choice of following. But early on, we saw a lot of traits in him. His people skills, his ability to master subjects quickly, his people just gravitated toward him. He had a natural leadership ability. So those skills, I was not surprised at all that he went into politics when he decided to end his naval career.
Frank Gamboa, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Frank Gamboa was one of John McCain's roommates at the U.S. Naval Academy in the 1950s, with us today on the phone from Fairfax, Virginia, and he's now part of John McCain's campaign. And, I think we've answered that email question already about his standing in his class. He was fifth from the bottom, Bob Timberg?
Yeah, he was fifth from the bottom. There is one element there, though, that needs to be clarified. Class standing at the Naval Academy is not totally a function of academic standing or academic prowess. It also includes conduct, in which John McCain stood very, very, very low.
You're right.
And it also includes something called leadership qualities, which he most assuredly had, but the leadership grade is tied for obvious reasons to the conduct grade. So if your conduct grade is really low, your leadership grade is going to be really low as well. And those two things, you know, pull down his class standing, which is, again, not to say that he was a star academically, because, you know, as we discussed, he essentially blew off half the curriculum.
Bob Timberg writes in his book that John McCain's instructors at the Naval Academy, like his captors later in North Vietnam and Republican Party leaders later in his career, learned that he did not have great affection for the rules all of the time. We'll continue our conversation about what shaped John McCain, the presidential candidate. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If you listen to the candidates in this year's presidential election, you hear a lot about policy and platforms. Well, you can find that information on their websites. What about the men themselves, the experiences that shaped them, their influences? Tuesday, we focused on Barack Obama. Today, John McCain. What do you want to know? Not about his positions or policies, but about his personality, the character, the beliefs of the man who would be the next president. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Our guest is Bob Timberg, the author of John McCain, An American Odyssey, and editor-in-chief of Proceedings, the magazine of the U.S. Naval Institute. And Bob McCain's is a remarkable story. As we mentioned, shot down in his attack plane over North Vietnam, broke his right leg and both arms. He was bayoneted, tortured later by the North Vietnamese. At one point, he declined an opportunity for early release. Many people would call that the resume of a hero. But John McCain, in some ways, considers himself something of a failure.
Well, it's interesting, various elements here. Number one, I spent hour upon hour interviewing Senator McCain, much of it about his time in prison. And I essentially detail in John McCain, An American Odyssey, what went on there. But I didn't get all that much of it from him. When we talked about his time in prison, what he wanted to talk about and what he did talk about was the gallantry of his fellow POWs. And whenever I brought up something that I had heard about in which he had acted in a heroic way that I heard about from somebody else, he would essentially confirm it in a kind of brusque way, but would never elaborate. And so much of what I have in my book about Senator McCain's, you know, the way he performed in prison is from other people. The one thing that's for sure came from him was his explanation of writing a confession, which he did after an extended time in prison in which he had been beaten, tortured, and essentially broken as In fact, virtually every other prisoner of war there had been broken, except he didn't know it at the time. And when he wrote this confession, in which he wrote in very hyperbolic terms, like, you know, said, "I am a black pirate, and, you know, I bombed hospitals," which he never did, and talked about the great, good, wonderful Ho Chi Minh. I mean, all of these were kind of signals that he was trying to send that, hey, you know, this isn't the way I
normally talk. Writing this under duress,
they're torturing me. But the fact of the matter was that, you know, when he finished doing that and he went back to his cell, it was like, I mean, in his mind, his father and grandfather, you know, were somehow there, and they were scolding and condemning, and you know, it was like, you know, he couldn't deal with it, and he actually took a shirt and rolled it up and wrapped it around his neck and climbed on a chair. And fortunately, the North Vietnamese guards were sort of watching him through this window in the cell, and they broke in and, you know, knocked him down. But as late as the 80s, when I was interviewing him about this, he talked about it as what he called the only blemish. And, you know, he said he'd never forget it.
His father, for much of the time he was in prison, was the overall commander of U.S. forces in the Pacific, including those in Vietnam. He was offered famously the opportunity to get out before other prisoners did, and he famously declined that opportunity. Let's get a caller on the line. This is Jeff, and Jeff is calling us from Greenbrier in Arizona, or is Arkansas?
Arkansas.
I always get confused. A-R-A-Z. I apologize.
It's okay. Well, my question, you know, I have a lot of respect for John McCain's military service. And I think that it's a tragedy what happened to him, especially the fact that he was tortured. You know, I mean, that's something that at that time America was not a country that tortured. And I can only imagine that had such an impact on him, the fact that he was forced to give false confession, the fact that he was beaten, the fact that he, you know, all of these things. You know, his arms, he can't move them above the shoulder because of medical treatment being withheld from him. And I just wonder how that affected his views on the American way of life once he got back to it, and also how that has affected him now that his party's platform is basically to support what, you know, is called extraordinary rendition. The difference is being that in America we still don't allow beatings, and I don't believe he was waterboarded. I wonder what impact this has had on him, and how he's adjusted emotionally to having to offer at least the facade of support for a policy that seems to allow torture.
Bob Timber?
I don't think it's even a facade. I mean, John McCain was the single most forceful and eloquent Republican in challenging the whole issue of torture and waterboarding. I mean, and I will tell you that if there's something about waterboarding in the Republican platform, which I don't believe there is, if John McCain were president, it sure in hell isn't going to happen.
Both he and Barack Obama have called for Guantanamo Bay to be closed.
Yes, they have, yeah.
Let me ask you also a question. After he got back from Vietnam, it was interesting at just last weekend in the interview at Saddleback conference that he said he thought his greatest failure was the failure of his first marriage.
Well, I think it's close, that's for sure.
What happened there?
His marriage to Carol McCain?
Mm-hmm.
They had a very warm and loving relationship before he went to prison, before he was shot down. While he was in prison, Carol was in a horrible car accident which crippled her, put her in a wheelchair for a long period of time. And this was about, as I recall, two and a half years before McCain was ever released. And Carol, you know, sent the word to the people in the Pentagon, don't tell John that this happened to me. He's got enough problems of his own. And, you know, there were channels by which, you know, the Pentagon could get a small amount of information to the POWs, and this is what Carroll was trying to stop. At any rate, he never found out about it, and he came back in 1973, and, you know, the Carroll that had actually been the subject of what I think of as his overheated prison thoughts was not the long, tall Sally that he
remembered. Yeah.
That he remembered, and you know, you have to also keep in mind that, you know, he was just out of prison, and you know, nobody, you know, very few of the people that came out of prison suddenly adjusted really quickly, and he sort of did and sort of didn't, and the marriage just, you know, died. I mean, I think I put it at one point, you know, they had won the war and lost the peace.
He refuses to put the blame on the war. He says it was entirely his fault.
Well, I know he does. But the fact is that it was, to some measurable extent, the war. But I mean, it certainly was, to a large extent, his fault. But let's also keep in mind, you know, what he had just gone through, and you know, he's never going to dodge things, but no. And it certainly wasn't Carroll's fault. So, you know, but it was not pretty. Oddly enough, though, and this is something I think is very, very interesting, is that Carol McCain, his first wife, remains a very close friend of his. And, you know, Carol will absolutely not say a bad word about him. And you know, they stay in touch. As I say, they are friends. And during his first campaign, again, that famous first campaign in Arizona for the House, one of his opponents in the primary called up Carroll and said, you know, hey, try to pick up some dirt, and Carroll refused to talk to him, and then called John McCain and told him that this guy called her up, and McCain called his rival and said, you know, if you ever do anything like that again to any member of my family, and I'm not quite clear what followed that, but it was certainly very threatening.
Joining us now on the phone from Scottsdale, Arizona, is Bill Shover. He met John McCain back in the 80s as an executive at a newspaper company that owned the Arizona Republic and the Phoenix Gazette. McCain had recently moved to Arizona, was looking to make a business and social connections to gain support for a possible run for office. Bill Shover and John McCain were friends until, well, Bill Shover, why don't you tell us what happened?
Well, I don't think we were actually friends. We knew each other, but I did meet John by happenstance at a meeting at the Arizona Biltmore, and I think the date was June 30, 1981. It was a meeting. Phoenix Chamber of Commerce was hosting a meeting for John Rhodes, who was then the congressman from Arizona. And I just happened to sit next to John at a table of about six people, and we started talking, and he had told me about his career at the Naval Academy. And I said, well, I used to scout the Naval Academy for the Fiesta Bowl, and I know some people there. And we talked about the athletic director and the coaches and people like that who are people in common we could talk about. And then John proceeded to tell me about his experiences in Vietnam, and he enchanted the entire table. I think about six or eight of us around a table talking. And he was very, very impressive. And I came back to the office and told our publisher at the time, his name was Darrow Duke Tully. I think you have information about Duke and his career.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, he's a pilot like you, Duke, and he's a man who has suffered in Vietnam, and he's had this experience, and you ought to get to know him.
Duke Tully turned out to be important to John McCain's first campaign and subsequent campaigns. They became great friends, but then Tully, it turned out, had lied about his war record and resigned in disgrace. John McCain he didn't exactly stand by his friend.
That's right. Duke and John became very, very close friends. They traveled together, they vacationed together. Duke, I think he was even the godfather of their daughter, Megan. And they were very, very tight all the time doing events out at the air base. They would fly together and everything. So it was just a natural thing when John started talking to him about politics, that Duke came to me and said, do you know anything about the career of John Rhodes, what he's going to do? And I said, no, I don't know that. He said, there's a rumor that John's not going to seek nomination again, and he may step aside. John was then the Speaker of the House from Arizona. He had a distinguished career, Republican. So he said, you know John very well. Would you call him and find out? And I said, sure, I'll find out. So I called John, and he was very discreet about it. He said, Bill, I can't tell anybody about this because I'm not announcing it to anyone. And I said, this is between us, John, not for the reporters. So he told me, he said, yes, I'm going to announce in a short time that I will not seek re-election. And I didn't tell him the reason why, and so he was fine with that. So I told Duke, and Duke said, well, stay where you are, and McCain's going to call you in a few minutes. And it wasn't within a half hour John McCain called me. There was a lot of noise in the background, and I said, John, where are you? He said, well, I'm on the freeway. I'm out the way to buy a home on Mesa, I think he said, rather than Tempe.
That would have been in the district.
In the district. And I said, what are you doing? He said, well, tell me about Rhodes. I said, well, it's between us, but he is not going to seek re-election, so he's not going to be a candidate. And John said, I'm on the way.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the start of what I thought was kind of a question of his character. And I told Duke about this and didn't mean a thing to Duke. And so John got into a very crowded primary. And I think there were four candidates on the Republican side, and Rhodes had favored one of the other candidates. But we sought out, through our editorial power, to remake John into a national hero, supposedly. So we had stories about him that he was this man from who had moved in here and had this Vietnam record and all this. And so we built him up as really beyond what we would do for a person in the primary, at least, anyway.
Bill Shover, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you very much for your time today.
Certainly.
Bill Shover, a retired newspaper executive with us by phone from Scottsdale, Arizona. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email that we have from Tamara, or perhaps Tamara, I'm not sure how it's pronounced. I read recently, I believe it was in the New York Times op-ed, that John McCain has a terrible temper and can be simply mean sometimes. Do those who have worked for or with him agree with this? If it's true, is it a significant character flaw for president? Bob Timberg, what do you think?
I think it's overblown. I mean, John, you know, Senator McCain got mad at me once and flared and, you know, 35 seconds later, it was over. And the fact of the matter is my knees didn't go wobbly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't, you know, maybe I'm an old Marine. I've got a pretty thick skin. So this doesn't, you know, people getting mad at me doesn't exactly, you know,
terrifying.
Wipe me out. But, you know, I think, you know, that temper thing is, you know, maybe the people that, you know, claim that are, you know, maybe he's really done it. I mean, they may also be overly sensitive, you know, for all I know. In addition, I also know that temper can be a very valuable leadership tool.
Well, here's another.
All I know is I have never seen anything about John McCain that indicated to me that he was out of control. I mean, certainly, does he get mad? Yes. But, you know, out of control, I've never seen it.
We just have a minute left, and I did want to ask you about something you wrote about a lot in the opening of your new book, and that's about John McCain's politics since the 2000 elections, you use the phrase in your book, the allegation that he's been pandering to the right.
Well, I mean, pandering to the right, I think, is simply not the case, although I have to say that in his relationship with Jerry Falwell, that certainly, you know, falls into the category if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it must be a duck. And, you know, so I found that, you know, if you want to say that's pandering to the right, I'd have to say, yeah, I agree. At the same time, I don't think it's been something that he has done consistently over the years. I mean, one of the things that, you know, people looked at was, you know, during the 2004 campaign, on the campaign trail together, they hugged
him and Bush,
President Bush and John McCain. And I
looked at the video, and it seemed to me that President Bush was the aggressor. So if the President of the United States wants to hug you, what precisely do you do if you think that's not a great thing?
Bob Timberg,
I think you just let it happen.
Thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun, Neil.
Bob Timberg's book is John McCain, An American Odyssey. Stay with us at the TOTN Summer Film Festival.